Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hey,
it's February 11th, 2014. Jimmy Carbonian.
Jimmy Ludwig from the All Happy Hour Guys.
Here we are, Beer Sessions Radio.
Yes,
Jimmy's
indeed.
Number 43, Good Brew Seal, Happy Hour Guys. We're here. It's February. It's been cold in New York City. And this is a night where Jimmy's brought in another guy from Michigan.
Yeah, I brought a buddy of mine from Michigan. You might have heard of him before. His name's Larry Bell. Have you ever met Larry before? He runs a little brewery out there.
I haven't. But what's fun is you were in Michigan for the holidays. You came back.
Yeah, I did.
You called your friends in Upper Peninsula.
Yeah,
Black Rock?
Black Rock's Brewing up in Marquette. Buddies of mine. I had him on the show a little while ago.
And we had a buddy. We had the CEO of Jolly Pumpkin visit in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been trying to get Larry Bell for a while. And I think it's because of you that we actually thought we should invite him on the show. Because apparently this is like the big rollout in New York of Bell's. And I'm not sure why everybody's been, you know, hankering for it, because I never had it before. What's so great about Bell's, Jimmy?
Well, I mean, we should let Larry speak for himself, you know, but I just got to say that as far as Michigan goes, Larry kind of started the whole thing rolling, you know what I mean? Back in, was it 84, Larry, or 85 when you were really rolled out?
We opened in 85.
85. Your daughter, who I also know, who works for you, she's the VP of your marketing. Is that right, Laura?
She's just straight up vice president.
Vice
now.
President yeah. now. That's cool. She mentioned a story about you were brewing on your own and a rock band or something stopped by to pick up. Can you tell?
Well, you know, I had the homebrew store, and then I kind of saw what was going on around the country. And so I was brewing some beer in my basement and whatnot, and I might have been selling some beer, $10 a case, and there was one, and people were showing up that I didn't know. I think this was getting out of control, and, you know, there's the knock one night on the door, 10 o'clock at night, I'm the only one home, it's like the hair went up on my neck, like, that might be the revenuers, and I was a little scared, but I opened the door, and, hey, Larry, and, yeah, it's the bluegrass band, Great Lakes Grass. Hey, Larry, we're going on the road. We got $10 for a case of that cream stout. Thank God. And the next day I wrote to the federal government and said, what do I got to do to get a license? Because it was time to fish or cut bait.
Right on. And that was the Kalamazoo Brewing Company back in those days, right? Before.
No, this was just homebrewer.
That was just homebrewer.
That was homebrewing.
Okay. Let's slow down. So, Larry, how did you get started? I mean, you started with a homebrew shop?
Yeah, I had the homebrew shop in 83, which was sort of a front to you know, spider web to catch unsuspecting flies that wandered in that I could sell shares in the new company to. And, you know, I started out, we sold $32,000 worth of stock and $7,000 loan from the bank. So we started with $39,000 and basically most of which was pissed away on pre-operational rent and fixing the place up. And, you know, I opened up with a 15-gallon soup pot and some plastic garbage pails for fermenters. It was a legalized home brewery to start with.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a lot of small breweries that we've seen open around the country and in New York. We got some great guests today, too, that we're going to be talking with Larry all night tonight, Jimmy Ludwig. Paul Kermazian from Barcade. He's got three, soon to be four bars in the New York area. He's hosting a night with you tonight. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
All right. And Josh Bernstein, who's one of our top beer writers, a complete beer course, and he's hosting some special events for New York City Beer Week. Welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, so Josh, you know in particular, there's a few other brewers that you know who've kind of started the way that Larry Bell did. And if you want to just elaborate on that.
You're catching me off guard right now.
Well, you're the guy. He's the guy he's like encouraging all these home brewers, and now quite a few of them are becoming pros, from homebrew to pro, kind of like how Larry did.
I mean, in New York City in particular, it's a pretty common story here and across the nation. I mean, that's how you go about and that's how you learn. You make a batch, you make another batch, and sometimes someone's like, hey, I think I want to buy your beer. And that kind of starts that thing in the back of your head where you go forward to make it happen. In New York City, we're seeing this happen a ton with Finback Brewing. Other Half Brewing just opened up. You know, it's just endless. I mean, it's just with the ability and the resources out there right now, like some of the homebrew being made is just as good as professional beer. Yeah.
And I'm actually going somewhere because of we've had a show last week talking about what is a contract brewery, what is a brewery. We saw Blue Point get bought by a big beer company. Mm-hmm. And I want to draw on these roots that Larry actually started the way that many of our peers are doing now, just had a homebrew shop and what you raise shares. And I think that's an interesting story. And let's try to stay on that.
I guess in a way I'm sort of the country's original nano brewer. There was a guy in Chelsea, Michigan, who had a one barrel system. I actually bought his brew kettle off of him for $100. It was a piece of junk. We never fired it again. We only use it at mash tun. But I started out doing 15 gallons and survived. So, you know, there's been guys to do it, but I think we're the nano brewery that actually survived. And now, yeah, there are people opening, you know, they're opening with a 20 barrel kettle or really want to have a lot of stuff. But a lot of the explosion here in New York, around the country, mm-hmm. is nano breweries. They haven't quit their day job, mm-hmm. you know, but they're out brewing one barrel at a time and opening up on Thursday through Saturday and selling mm-hmm. beer and having fun with it.
But I think the key with that, Larry, is that you kind of, especially in the state of Michigan, which is now a huge beer state. I mean, there's just beer. It's a fantastic place to visit in terms of like Bev touring. There's all sorts of places to see. But you were one of the first people back in the day to show people that you could do this and survive and make a couple of bucks, you know, and keep on going.
Well, we didn't make any bucks in the early days, you know, and we're making beer and straight computer locker country. But, you know, I think it was really nice. I was watching a sort of a local Michigan movie the other day, and they were talking with the guys from Founders, and they had some kudos saying, you know, Bell's was here, and they kind of set the bar high. So when we opened, we wanted to make sure that, you know, we're doing at least what Bell's is doing. You know, and I made a lot of stout as a home brewer. I make barley wine. I used to make something called Dr. Bell's Medicinal Stout, which is very important to listen to some Sun Ra records as you made it.
Can we get a keg of that?
But you know, I always like really full flavored beers, and you know, if you're going to go out and do it legally, that's what I wanted to go out to do.
So let's go back to earlier. So you had a homebrew shop. You started raising shares. So what was the next step? And did you keep selling homebrew supplies?
Still do to this day.
Still do.
To this
day.
Yeah.
Our homebrew sales are through the flipping roof.
Yep.
You know, I got great guys in there. We do classes every month. You know, we're helping sponsor. National Homebrewers Convention is coming to Grand Rapids this June. We'll certainly be a big part of sponsoring that. And we have a homebrew competition every year. We have our own barley farm. So on our anniversary weekend in September, we have the homebrewers come in. We give away 30 barrels of wort made from the barley from our farm, 5 gallons at a time. And then the homebrewers can make whatever they want out of it. That's the base. And then the winning homebrewer gets to come brew their beer at our place.
So, Larry, you've seen from 83 to now, you've seen this whole homebrew revolution really take off. How have you seen the demographic shift with the homebrewers are coming in the shop and buying ingredients now?
You know, I remember when I was, for a while, I was on the Association of Brewers board when homebrewing had really dipped, mm-hmm. you know, back in the early 2000s. And now, all of a sudden, we have this resurgence mm-hmm. again. As far as demographics go, there's a lot of young people mm-hmm. Doing it. There's those homebrewers who start homebrewing and go, heck with that. I can buy, there's so much good uh-huh. beer out there, I'll just go buy beer. But it's really across the board. It tends to be a white male-dominated mm-hmm. Hobby as mm-hmm. is sort of craft brew industry. So it's not that different.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask a question, Larry, and that this is something that I think that follows along where we were. Which is that you also set a precedent for political involvement. And I know that in Michigan, the Brewers Guild there is quite politically active, and that you were a part of that. Can you tell us a little bit about that from the early days, what that was like?
Ooh, that's a serious question.
Yeah, man.
I remember.
I get all serious on you and stuff.
I remember the first bill I had in. I went to Senate committee, and the lobbyists for the wholesalers stood up, and they had me kicked out into the hallway so fast I couldn't believe it. My local senator said, well, you learned something today, young man. But working with Tom Burns, God rest his soul, we were able to pass a first, I was able to pass a $2 per barrel tax break.
Ah.
Michigan has the highest excise taxes of any northern industrial state.
Yeah.
So I was able to get this $2 rebate for small breweries. We started at 5,000 barrels. That has since grown up to 30,000 barrels. And I think that that really has been extremely helpful in, for small breweries to get going in Michigan. And then with Tom Burns and myself, a couple people, we got the BrewPub legislation passed. So June 11th, 93, we were the first Michigan brewery to sell beer by the glass to the public. And that opened up a whole new level of involvement or opportunity for these other breweries to come along. We have some bills in the Michigan legislature now. Things are a little bit more complex because we do have, you know, what the brew pubs think and what the microbrewers think and what production breweries think and how does that go with the wholesalers and the two retailer associations, you know, for the bars and the grocers association. It's tough to get consensus on some of those things and get everybody to pull together, but I think we're working on that pretty well.
Do you feel like people really see the numbers now? They see the jobs, they see the, I mean, we always say on the Happy Hour Guys, we say that, you know, brewers make great neighbors. You know, they tend to put money back into their communities. They tend to bring jobs.
It really is great on a local level because, yeah, you can see those jobs there, and there tends to be a lot of philanthropy in the brewing industry, giving back to charity, doing events for charity within the community. I think people like that because they can come out, they can touch and see the brewery, and they know the people that's there. You know, it's part of the whole change in culture that we've been going on since the 60s that's just not with beer, but where people, it's the local movement, it's a healthier movement, and people don't necessarily want to get their products from a faceless corporation. They want to be able to come out and see it and go, oh yeah, I've been to the Eccentric Cafe, or, you know, yeah, I took the tour over at Brooklyn. I met those guys. I like them, and I want to support that organization now.
Yeah. Yeah. So how important do you say that a lot of these craft breweries are to a sense of civic pride? Like, how did the town of Kalamazoo rally around you when you were opening up? Or did they not? They hate you.
Good question.
Lunatic Larry by the railroad track selling beer in a bag and a box.
I will take two.
Yeah. You know, sometimes a prophet is never known in his hometown. You know, it takes a while because when I started, just craft beer wasn't happening. But we get a lot of support from our community now. We get a lot of support from state of Michigan because back in the day, I was local beer to all of Michigan. Yeah. I was the only guy.
You were alone.
I'm driving up to the UP there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was it.
Well, I don't know if y'all folks out there know, but I grew up in the UP there, so I kind of know what it's like. I've lived in New York for 20 years, but whenever I go back, after about 30 minutes, I start talking
when
like
you came
this.
Back after Christmas, Jimmy, he looked like he had like combat fatigues and army boots, and he had these big chops, and it looked like he'd been out hunting or something.
Wearing your swampers?
I was. Yeah. Just like you do, you know.
But Larry's got on like this kind of duck red hat.
Oh, no, that's a crummer. That's a Stormy Crummer. This is a Upper Peninsula made very famous hat. As a matter of fact, there are those hats are in Sochi right now at the Olympics.
Well, Larry, we're going to take a break before we did the
gotcha.
Break.
Okay. You got the
Bell's Brewery. And what's the other brewery? The Upper something?
We're opening a new brewery in the Upper Peninsula called Upper Hand Brewery. Sort of a fun little side project. And yeah, we do it like this, guys. We're all playing with our hands here in the studio.
Yep.
He's very handsy.
We're not going to make Bell's products up there. We're only going to sell that beer in the Upper Peninsula and across the Northern Tier. So we got a federal trademark on Upper Hand. And then we also got a federal trademark, not on IPA, but on UPA, Upper Peninsula Ale. And we're just going to have some fun. It's a little 20-barrel system up there, you know, sweet little brand-new brewery with nice equipment, but on a small scale.
By chance, do you have a summer house up there?
Two. Yeah, my family goes back like 100 years up there, so I go up there a lot. And, you know, is it a retirement project? Let's call it a semi-retirement project.
Didn't Jolly Pumpkin do a similar thing, too, where they opened up another secondary brewery in the Upper Peninsula?
They're up in the Traverse City.
Yeah, they're northern lower. Yeah. Okay. And it's funny, the UP is discovering craft beer in a way that we didn't expect they would, which is kind of great.
Jimmy, when we open, we'll be the 13th brewery in the Upper Peninsula, which has a population of 300,000.
That's right.
So
that's right. Fill Michigan Stadium three times, and you've got the entire peninsula.
I mean, per capita number of breweries, that's pretty high.
You know what's cool about this is I've never been to Michigan, and I feel like I'm learning a lot.
But I'm taking you to Michigan,
Jimmy. I want
to make
a toast, everybody. Thanks for coming on. I will say, our listeners on Heritage Radio Network, we know that they're listening from England to Michigan. We've had a lot of regulars calling about that, and we know that you're interested in what's going on with Larry Bell, and also I know that many of you like to know places to come in New York City. And when we come back after the short break, we'll talk about some of the places that Larry Bell is visiting here in New York City when we come back on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Neighbors all complain. Little do they know that I'm the end of the rainbow. She tells me there's money to be made digging graves. She says a lot of things.
You're listening to When It Rains by Four Lincolns on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I've got the best beer journalist in America here, Josh Bernstein. The best actor who talks about beer, Jimmy Ludwig.
The best beer-talking actor.
One of the best bar owners in New York, Paul Kermazian, and one of the best brewers, at least in Michigan, Larry Bell.
Oh, come on.
So
the
we're
entire
back here,
country.
Heritage Radio country. Network. Check us out. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and get a membership. I just did. I renewed my membership. I got two cards for like something, I don't know, a very good price, and I can go to a lot of events and discounts around town and all that. It's kind of like the, you know, public radio, and it is a nonprofit, but Heritage Radio Network, we're really proud to be part of it. And we know many of you guys are listening from Michigan and other places, and we're really proud to have Jimmy Ludwig from the Upper Peninsula and Larry Bell on. So, wait, before you do that, Jimmy, what were you just drinking? Larry Bell is here in New York for the first time. This is a special week in New York City. He's launching in Brooklyn and Manhattan and a lot of different bars, and we're really proud to have you on. So, for our listeners, we just had a couple of your beers, and just tell us quickly some of the beers we had.
Okay, we've got our Smitten Golden Rye Ale. This is the second year that we've bottled it. We do it in January, February, kind of around Valentine's Day because, you know, what do men want for Valentine's Day? Beer.
Beer.
But it's just, you know, nice rye, a little bit of dry hop, spiciness of the rye. Bell's Amber Ale, which that's kind of the beer that built the brewery back in the 80s and early 90s. Doesn't get enough love. Extremely food-friendly beer. Michael Jackson always used to consistently say he thought it had a soft, peachy, apricot fruitiness to it. Bell's Midwestern Pale Ale. This is our pale ale that we make with some...
That was pretty... Can you say that again, Larry?
I can say that I've been accused of having a soft, peachy fruitiness in the past, but that I don't think they were talking about amber ale.
Talk later.
Maybe at a night of joy.
Cocktails, anyone? The Midwestern Pale Ale. We've got a barley farm up in Shepherd, Michigan, and we're growing 2-row up there. So this features some of our Michigan locally grown barley. We do get a little bit of Michigan hops in there, not a lot because there just isn't a lot there. Bell's Two Hearted Ale, greatbeer.com, just rated the number one IPA in the world. And
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Woo-hoo.
And 7% alcohol. This is features one hop, the Centennial hop, throughout it, dry hopped. You know, for us, I guess, because we're in the Midwest, sort of the breadbasket of the country, we've always kind of been a brewery that's about balance and, you know, not just indiscriminately throwing hops at a beer. But so that has a good malt backbone, nice bitterness, probably too dangerous of a drinkability at 7%. And that's sort of becoming our flagship these days.
It's nice. We're having a great time tasting through them. I know Paul Kremuzian's here from Barcade Bar, and you're going there after the show tonight for a tasting. Paul, what made you get so inspired? You've got like 14 beers on tap or something like that.
14
right?
beers tonight. Yeah, it's going to be a big event. We expect a big turnout. As a lot of people have been anxiously awaiting Bell's beers in New York. So.
Well, and you know, so Paul and I know each other from when Paul was 01 or 02. When did you do the movie?
2002.
2002. Yeah. Paul did the movie, and I have a starring role in it. I have my IMDb page because of Paul's movie.
It's one of your finest performances.
I think I was the only one that got you guys sick drunk.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of people got us drunk, but you got us beyond drunk.
Yeah.
Paul, what was the movie?
American Beer was a documentary that...
It was a documentary.
It was a documentary that was filmed in 2002, 12 years ago. I can't...
I've seen it, 12 years ago. I love it. It's a great movie.
It's a great movie. So
yeah,
much
Larry's
fun.
One of the stars of it.
Now, I have to say, I was at a bar in Midtown yesterday, and they were waiting, a little craft beer bar. It's kind of new. It was called Beer Culture. It's on 45th Street in Midtown. And I walked in at 1 p.m., and the owner was standing at the door like a high schooler waiting for his prom date. And he was waiting for the truck to pull up and for York kegs to roll in. It was crazy. It's a little nutty right now in New York. Where else are we going to be seeing Bell's in New York?
Well, Matt, you want to jump in and give us
well, I know
short answer tonight. Everywhere.
Yes. Number 43.
Everywhere.
This is one of, I'd say, in the past 10 years, the one of the biggest brewery rollouts in New York City. We've seen a lot of new breweries come to the market in the last 10 years, even more so in the last 5 years, but this is absolutely the biggest. You know, our philosophy, I think it's aligned with Bell's philosophy, is the right beer, right account. So, you know, you're going to see Bell's in every relevant craft beer account, anywhere that, you know, people are looking for a, you know, in the off-premise, a quality six-pack that you know you're going to get fresh. It's going to be stored cold, but you will pretty much see it go rampant in New York City.
So what are the couple places you brought them to?
So today was a big Brooklyn day. Tomorrow being more Manhattan. So touching on Brooklyn, we started this morning at Mug's Ale House, which is one of the first craft beer bars in New York City. Ed and Helena, who own the place, are craft beer enthusiasts. Then we went to Dirk the Norseman, which is a new brew pub in Brooklyn. Same owners as Browery Lane, which is one of the great craft beer destinations. Then over to Park Slope, where we went to Beer Craft, which is a great on-off-premise shop, bottle shop. Then to the brand-new, fancy, shiny, third-on-third Whole Foods Brooklyn, which has an amazing beer set, great rooftop bar.
Yeah.
Then to High Dive, which is a great cross-dive bar, beer bar, awesome beer list. Bells, all these places, Bells on Tap in package. Then to The Gate, which is, again, like Mugs, one of the first established craft beer bars in Park Slope in New York City, and then last and not least, the Owl Farm, where we met the entire group of Bar Great Harry, Mission Dolores, and Owl Farm. The whole crew was there to greet Larry, had beers, and just talked about beer. And those are the type of establishments you'll find Bell's at.
Beer at every stop?
Two.
So, I guess, so Larry, now, I mean, it's been, you know, coming from the Midwest myself, I grew up in Ohio, and everyone's like, when's Bell's going to come to New York City? When's Bell's going to come to New York City? So why now? Why is Bell's coming to New York City in 2014?
Great question. Well, you know, New York is the first new state that we've taken on in 5 years. We haven't had any geographical growth, and it was, you know, it's just time. You know what? We're a big brewery. It's time to put your big boy pants on. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's still, you know, it's a little daunting to come to the city. But so we started New York by doing upstate first, just to kind of walk before we run, get some people hired, make sure we had our ducks in a row, and then come actually take on the city.
So what are the big challenges of coming into the metropolis? You know, 8 million people in the city, 19 million metro area, 50 million tourists a year. Do you have to take into account those sort of numbers and, like, anticipate how much demand you're going to have?
Well, I think the big thing was selecting proper wholesaler and then just actually, you know, you sit down and you do numbers. You forecast numbers, what you can do. You know, 50 million tourists want Bell's. I can't do it. I'd love to, but I can't. But, again, you know, finding people that you can partner with and present the beer properly. And then, you know, once you get yourself established, then we can grow from there.
Did you have to pick and choose what parts of your product line you'd bring into New York City? Or are there any ones that we're not going to see or things that may be coming in later on?
I think we're pretty much trying to do the whole product line. There was some... We knew we were going to bring Hop Slam in, but we didn't tell anybody because we didn't want...
Except for the internet.
Yeah, well, we tried to keep it as quiet as we could, that damn internet.
You're king of rate beer. In IMDb, you've won the internet.
Which one's the best one? Is it Two Hearted or Hop Slam?
Hop Slam's got all the hype. Everybody, I mean, I know people in Michigan that will crawl over their grandmother to get a six-pack of Hop Slam.
We call it Crack Slam at work. We just had Hop Slam Gate down in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, my God. My little brother lives there, and he told me about that.
You know, it's like,
guess where there's Hop Slam in New York this week? Jimmy's number 43 in the East Village.
Yes!
Nice plug, Jimmy.
There you go.
Well, I didn't really know much about Bell's because I've never been to Michigan, never had it, but many of my staff said, you know, what are you getting? Said, you better get Hop Slam. And I said, okay, we better get Hop Slam.
We'll have it at Barcade tonight.
Nice. Yeah.
We got Barcade tonight, and then tomorrow, I know for sure, I'll be over in Manhattan, I know for sure that I'm going to be stopping by the Blind Tiger, and tomorrow night we finish up at Ginger Man.
Oh, nice.
Which is what, on 34?
And I will give you a plug. You guys really do have a charitable component. You're doing a great job. There's an event that we're hosting tomorrow night called Brisket King in New York City with 20 different chefs serving brisket, and we worked something out where we're getting about 50 cases of Bell's. I know you guys are actually making a charitable donation to the Grow NYC Youth Ed Market, Youth Ed Program. So I think that's a great way to enter New York City. And awesome. Thanks for helping them out. Yeah, there's over 60 green markets in the city, and they have a program where school kids can come and learn about farms and everything else. And
you
may not know it, but you guys are making a donation, so thank you.
Brewers making great neighbors, man.
Yeah.
It
really is. And I say you remind me of Tony McGee from Lagunitas. I don't know if that's a...
Tony's in Aruba right now.
Is he?
Yeah.
Your buddy.
At the convention that I skipped to come for the rollout in New York.
That is important. I mean, you're here in fairly chilly, I mean, not by Michigan standards, but somewhat chilly and somewhat frozen New York. You could have been in Aruba this week.
I got off the plane. It was 28 degrees yesterday. It was like, this is spring. Yeah, I love it.
But, you know, you're kind of matter of fact. I mean, like, you basically started with, I mean, you're the dream that so many guys want, and that's what's so cool about it is we talked about, you know, a great brewery like Blue Point getting bought by a larger company. And, you know, at some point, I'm sure everyone has to move on in some way. But at the same time, it seems daunting to many people to think that, oh, I could never open a brewery or the breweries are, you know, it's over now. You know, these guys have so much money and they're starting. But, you know,
it takes time to build a brand. You can't build a brand overnight. I'd read an article a couple years ago, some Labatt's guys saying they thought it took 20 years to build brand equity. I don't know about, you know, right now in the craft movement, I think you can build some equity in your brands sooner than that. Of course, today's consumer is, you know, not quite as loyal. They might be loyal to craft more so, but not necessarily a brewery. But you don't just start off your first day going, hey, you know, I've got a new beer and everybody's got to buy it. It takes a long time for people to understand your beer and your philosophy of beer and want to go buy that day in, day out.
When you really, I mean, you hung in there. You know, I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of times, especially starting when you did, when nobody knew from craft beer back in the 80s and even in the early 90s, you hung in there. And you have staying power.
I think there's a segment in Paul's movie where I talk about having to go see the bankruptcy attorney and he says, I need $2,500 retainer. I said, well, I don't have $2,500. I didn't have enough money to go bankrupt.
Wow.
I think you didn't.
Yeah, you know.
That's inspiring.
Let me get some more. So Jimmy, from Michigan,
yep.
Being a young guy mm-hmm. when you were drinking Bell's, just tell us a few memories of that, and then I'm going to ask Paul about when he interviewed.
Actually, I mean, for me, it was...
Sorry, 10 years ago.
It's about one of the seasonals that everybody in Michigan knows about from Bell's, and that's Oberon.
Oberon.
You know, getting Oberon is a... Spring hasn't started until you've had your first sip of Oberon in Michigan.
When did you first make that beer, Larry?
I think 90 or 91, and it was originally called Soul Sun.
That's right.
S-O-L-S-U-N, which was a bastardization of the word Saison, and I was trying to make a, you know, cloudy wheat beer for the summertime, and, you know, never, ever did I imagine that we could sell so much wheat beer in America, and, you know... That's been the driver of Bell's. Jimmy's right. Oberon opening day in Michigan is a national holiday.
It's incredible.
So what do you do? Launch it same time every year?
Usually about a week before baseball season, the Monday before baseball season.
Yep.
And, when Oberon comes, you have survived the winter.
Yep.
And thank God.
Even if it's still frozen, the thaw is on its way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like at our bar, we might tap 32 kegs of Oberon opening day. The bar a half block down is 18. It's just all over the state. It's crazy.
A huge day, and it's become a rite of passage for people. You know, it's like, I know the seasons have changed, it's Oberon time, and now Hop Slam is starting to approach that a little bit too. It's like, I know, you know, a certain month of the calendar is flipped over when I can get myself a Hop Slam.
Yeah, but Hop Slam is 5,000 barrels and Oberon's 100,000 barrels.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
All right. Hey, we're gonna have to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes. When we come back, Paul's going to talk a little about when he first interviewed you about 10 years ago for his movie, too. Okay?
All right.
We'll be back on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
This is Big Town by Four Lincolns on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got a special show tonight. We've got great audience, but we're really talking with Larry Bell's from Bell's in Michigan. It's their launch in New York City. And there's a lot of things going on, so we're going to get straight to it. Paul Kermesian from Barcade. Paul, you did a great movie called American Beer, and big part of that was interviewing Larry Bell. Tell us a little bit about that experience. Why not?
I'll tell you what I remember of it.
It was a long time ago, right?
Like, well, 10, yeah, 12 it was a long ago. Time ago. Yeah, but of the evening was also a rough one. Basically, in the film, what we would do is we would show up at a brewery and The host would of the brewery, the owner, brewer usually would we'd do a tasting and do an interview, and then sometimes we'd go out for a few beers. Larry, I think you had said you had time for one, go out for one beer, I think is what you
well,
told
I'm
us.
I'm not going out all night with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like he lured us into that one. We were like, all right, we'll go out for one. Maybe we can get him out, keep him out for two. And then we went, started at the Eccentric Cafe, and then we went to the Old Hat.
So I take these guys, I had this little country brew pub, and we get out there, and it was their 13th day on the road, five guys all in a van together. And one of my bartenders, it was her 21st birthday, and all her little girlfriends were out. I swear to God, there is footage in that movie that I shot, because we had a band, and out in Little Lawton, Michigan, when they started playing, everybody dancing, all these boys, you'd think they hadn't seen women in 3 years they've been in prison.
Well, there were 13 days on the road, five guys in one van.
Getting mighty lonely on the road.
So they actually put the camera down, and I started filming them dancing in my bar out there.
This show has...
We were out so long that we ran out. Our batteries ran out. So we only filmed till about 10 p.m., but I think we were out till about 2:30 or 3.
This show has sex. It has danger.
That's awesome. But then with the movie, so American Beer, the movie, you interviewed Larry Bell. So and along the way, you've collected from owning Barcade, which was your next step after that, you've collected quite a few beers in your cellar. What was the beer that you just poured for us?
So I brought over a couple of Bell's beers that I've been holding for a special occasion. I didn't know, you know, really basically any beer I have at home is for a special occasion. It's, you know, you don't know when that's going to be.
Like Tuesday.
Exactly. day you're moving, which is what I just did recently. So I had a batch, Bell's Batch 7000 and Bell's Batch 10000.
Oh
I have
my
no
God.
Idea when these are from. Larry maybe knows.
So there's collectible beer. So we're trying to like give the world a Bell. So, you know, Jimmy's from Michigan, so he drinks Bells, and we're tasting through the line tonight. But there's also these awesome collectible beers. Tell us about that, Larry.
Yeah, so we started, you know, batch number one when we opened the brewery, and then batch number 1,000 we did a commemorative, and every 1,000 batches. So the batch 7,000 we're having, this probably got to be 5 years old now, and got to be. And
wow!
Every time you do a 1,000 batches, a different beer.
Different beer, and it's a one off, and you kind of do it so that it could never be repeated. And the 7,000.
Why do you kill the brewer?
Larry's come back from the dead about what's that? Gosh, 10,000 times now.
So, are you actually the brewer? I mean, did you start as the brewer? Was that your passion, or you're like the?
No, that was my. I was. I was everything in the. It was me. You know, I was one employee, you know, and I still have my fingers in brewing, but I got a lot of highly qualified people. I got to come out and do radio shows with you, you know.
And we're so glad that you did.
And we're going to give a shout out. You know what? There are a couple of things that we got excited about. First of all, a couple weeks ago in the barbershop, I read Playboy when I go to the barbers. I can say that. And there was an article.
For the articles,
they have
of
deep articles. And it was. It said, conservative brewer Larry Bell speaks out against the Keystone Pipeline. And because of that, I thought, wow, we can go deeper with this interview. And we have a good friend out in the Midwest, Lucy Saunders, a Siebel Institute Cooking with Beer author, and she's active with the Great Lakes Water Conference. But anyways, that's an interesting side note, but let's talk about that for a minute.
You know, we had... He doesn't have
Playboy, he only has Sports Illustrated at home.
At my barber. I got to figure out which of my friends read Playboy from that. I have my picture in there. My father would be so proud. You know, we've had an issue with the Enbridge pipeline company in Kalamazoo where 3 years ago we had the largest inland oil spill ever in the United States in the Kalamazoo River.
A big mess.
And they're still cleaning up, and they're trying to put some remediation facilities next to our brewery, process this benzene-laden tar sands. And I really got involved more about what's going on with these pipelines in the country and with water. And, you know, for brewers, water is our lifeblood. And for me, our conversation about energy in the country can't just be about energy. It's about water, because in the end, that's our lifeblood. You can't drink oil. You got to drink water. And for brewers all across the country, I think it's time for us to come together and start having that discussion about how we're going to defend clean water in the country. I'm all for the United States being self-sufficient energy-wise, but I really think it's time for the country to have a serious talk about where this energy comes from and what's it going to do to our environment as we go forward as a society?
And we're really aware of that in Michigan as well, because you know you're surrounded by these beautiful Great Lakes that are it does them a disservice to call them lakes. They are seas. They are inland oceans.
Yeah.
And when you see these things, you fall to your knees. They're so amazing. I mean, you can't see the other side, and that's fresh water. And when you see all that there, you think, I got to take care of this. I have to care for this.
So Enbridge has a 60-year-old pipeline that runs under the Straits of Mackinac that connects Lakes Michigan and Huron. And they want to start pumping this diluted bitumen, the tar sands, through there at a higher pressure than ever before. And were there to be a spill in the Straits of Mackinac, you're talking about contaminating Lakes Michigan and Huron. You're talking about contaminating Mackinac Island, which is our top tourist attraction in the state. And everybody takes their water. Our new brewery up in Escanaba we're building is going to take Lake Michigan water. So, you know, we've got to keep that clean.
And getting serious, too. So, you know Lucy Saunders.
Yeah, Lucy.
Have you been
friend.
To her Great Lakes Water Conference?
I haven't personally, but my guys have presented papers there, and we're certainly active with it.
So definitely we're seeing more. Like, I know at Omegang, they're more involved with
fracking issues.
Caring about their water. But water is a big issue for brewers.
Absolutely. It's a big issue. You know, it's a big issue for access to it for the guys out west. But then cleanliness, as we have this boom in fracking and pipelines, we got to guarantee that we got a clean water source. And I've tried having that conversation with some of the big guys who I know, and maybe we'll get somewhere where I would really love to see a unified voice of the brewers, the Beer Institute, the Brewers Association, come out with a policy about clean water in America. We're not quite there yet. I would hope to see, you know, in Germany, the brewers all signed the petition to ban fracking. And, you know, I think we might need to get somewhere that way here in the States.
I feel like we're headed in that direction. But again, it takes people like you guys to sort of lead that charge, you know, kind of like you did before, becoming politically active just to keep your brewery going
the
state.
Of course, Jimmy, it's a lot because every environmentalist in the country has read Playboy or seen me inside Climate News or something.
In the barbershop.
In the barbershop. Yeah, and they, you know, I did a conversation the other Friday.
It's a barbershop has Playboy, guys. Just
that's right.
My barbershop.
And he reads the articles.
Nice. He read the articles. They have Playboy, and guess what else they have? They even have, like, vodka for you to sip while you wait.
You don't even have that much hair, Jimmy. How much time do you spend in a barbershop?
It's the beard.
That's why he doesn't have hair. He's there all the time.
Vodka and Playboy. You
know? It's a men's club. Come on.
I wanted to buy a subscription.
I wanted to ask something. I mean, if we're done with this particular conversation, but I wanted to ask about something. And this was something I heard actually when the Happy Hour guys, when we were shooting at your brewery about a year and a half ago, we went into a room with Laura, and she showed us some old Cypress fermentation tanks that you had bought from Stroh's. Is an old legacy brewer that my dad grew up drinking and every Michigan guy grew up drinking. Well,
Jimmy, what's a Cypress fermentation tank?
Yeah.
Well, so there was an arranged lunch between John Stroh III and myself a few years ago. And out of that, we bought two things for Mr. Stroh, these three fermentation tanks and a 1926 Model T beer delivery truck. It says powered by Schlitz on it. So these tanks were originally made in 1904 for the Stroh Brewery Company downtown Detroit. And they hold, we think, about 160, 175 barrels each, open top. They're really beautiful. John Mallett, who works for me, who's one of the world's smartest brewers, went and found three solid bottoms and the sides to go with them. And the woodworkers had to kind of change it a little bit to make them go. So now we have them put together, the hoops on them, water in them. We still have to put some fittings on them to bring them up to code. We built a special room at the brewery that's an air, positive displacement air room. You'll have to dip your feet because it's open fermentation. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have kind of a tip of the hat to Stroh's. So we're thinking about making maybe sort of a lighter Bock beer or something, a dark lager or something that'll be keg only. We won't bottle it because of the open-top fermentation. We're a little worried about that.
And just so you guys know, Stroh's closed the same year that Larry officially, or near the same time.
But now, Jimmy, here's the great thing. Growing up in Michigan, well, it's a joke that Stroh spelled backwards was Shorts. Now we have Shorts Brewery in Michigan.
That's right.
Shorts spelled backwards is Stroh's. Go figure. So who, karma.
Who owns the Stroh's brand these days? Is it still being...
Pabst. I believe Pabst.
Yeah.
But Pabst is, of course, like another kind of like theoretical brewery, too.
But I have to tell you...
They own a lot of the kind of old regional brands that they brew now.
They bought them up. Yeah. But I have to tell you that when I told my dad, you know, ex-military, you know, kind of hard guy about this, I saw a tear in his eye. I'm going to say I saw just a glimmer of a tear in his eye that you were going to be using that old equipment.
Yeah, you know, I collect a lot of stuff. I like collecting Brewiana, so we've got some nice Stroh pieces that we're going to put there, you know. And I remember when I first joined Master Brewers, Stroh's had closed, but they still had research and offices there. So I used to go to Master Brewers District Detroit, and you know, when you were going to the Grosse Pointe Hunt Club, you damn well better have on a coat and tie. Now I'm the old school guy at the meeting. I'll wear a tie to Master Brewers. Like, dude, we got to cut that off.
What's the hat that you recommend? You're wearing this red hat.
Stormy Cromer.
Okay, that's what you're wearing. But hey, quick thing. Okay, last question. You're here in New York City. What do you think about, like, what does New York mean to you?
Yeah, how you liking
New York?
Tell
us something about New York for our listeners.
How you liking it?
You know, I was trying to think. I think in life this is my 10th visit to New York City. I remember my first when I was 4 years old because I got to go to Yankee Stadium. I'm a big baseball fan.
Wow.
And I'm really pleasantly surprised, excited about the buzz around New York. There really is there's a lot of Michigan people here, a lot of people that know about the brand, I think much more so than I thought. So boy, things are going pretty well. I'm learning a lot about Brooklyn today.
Yeah. I was just going to say that, you know, New York has never really been a beer town. We are a cocktail town, a wine town. But, you know, New York never has anything in half measure, so we're becoming a beer town, and it's become a really great beer town. And so we're very happy to have Bell's in town as well.
Hell yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to step in. Just want to say, hey, the New York City Beer Week's coming up, and a couple of events. The opening night this year will be at Grand Central Terminal. The New York City Brewers Guild has organized that. And that's pretty cool.
That is so cool.
I was talking to somebody organized. They said they actually have to deal with Homeland Security because they're bringing CO2 into Grand Central Terminal. So they've overcome a lot to make this happen. It's going to be a great event. Opening night bash. Check out New York City Beer Week. And then our event, which Beer Sessions Radio and Dave Broderick and a bunch of us produce, it's New York City's Brewer's Choice. This year we have over 25 brewers, mostly from New York State. And the thing that's cool for Larry is that all of them are making beer with New York State grain malt, which is a special project with the regional grains project, which is we're starting to do that. So, and our buddy Jeff O'Neill is a keynote speaker. So there's a lot of cool things going on with New York City Beer Week. On another note, I just want to say that there's some producers outside, but this is actually our 200th episode.
Oh, congratulations.
Congratulations, Jimmy.
It's been 4 years, and I started with my good buddy Ray Dieter, who died, and Bree O'Connor was our producer for a long time, and a lot of great friends, and many of you have been on the show a lot. I just want to say that before they get crazy out there, we're gonna crack some bells over there, and I'd like to thank our sponsors always at greatbrewers.com. This is their fourth year also sponsoring. Thanks so much for keeping this alive. We say we take it one show at a time. And how many beers at a time we drink? About five at a time, right?
I think around 11 in my count.
And
right
Josh, now, let's talk about Beer Sessions Radio. Josh, you always joke, what do you say about this? We're just a lot of people in one room drinking beer. Something like
is that my joke? That's a terrible joke if that's my joke.
That's why you're the writer.
No, my wife was basically going on beer sessions. She's going to come home drunk again, which happens all the time.
And you're like, why is that bad?
Yeah.
It's like, it's Tuesday.
And one last thing, quick around. Jimmy, just everyone say one quick thing before we sign off. Jimmy.
Jimmy Ludwig from the Happy Hour Guys. Come see us, man. HappyHourGuys.com.
Bell's Night at Barcade tonight. Don't miss it.
Rock on.
Josh Bernstein, author of The Complete Beer Course. Buy it. Give my daughter
We didn't talk about your cave tour. We're bringing you back, Josh, because you have some of the coolest things going on for Brick. The Homebrew Jamboree that sold out.
And we're investigating underground lagering caves in 1860s Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, and we're going to talk about,
so
next
cool.
time we're bringing Josh back, we're talking about all the old brewery and brewery cave places in New York, because he really knows more than anybody. Hmm. So, and Larry, say a few words before we go.
New York City Bells couldn't be happier. Thank you.
All right. And thanks for coming on. We've got our great sponsors. And again, thanks to Larry, Matt from Union Beer. We've got Paul, Josh, Jimmy Ludwig, and I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Our producers, Jack Inslee, Maggie Seiden, Justin Kennedy, and our new engineer, Evan DeVito. I finally know his name. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Hey!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.